Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we do a very deep dive on white privilege with a young expert, and we talk about the Philadelphia riots, and it's a thought-provoking discussion, plus a old stories you'd never heard about Laszlo Gorog, my grandpa. First, I'll tell you about NetSuite. If you're a business owner, you don't need us telling you how to run your business. You know it's tough to run a business out there, yeah. And let's not make it harder than necessary. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down. Stop paying for multiple systems that don't give you the info you need when you need it. Upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. Get visibility and control over financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more, all in one place, instantaneously. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time, save money with NetSuite, right, Dawson?
Join the over 22,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Adam. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Adam. netsuite.com/Adam. Although the Ace Man wasn't able to lock down President Trump for the stereo app conversation, we are still working on it and trying to reschedule that interview for before the election. Until we do, the next guest to join the Ace Man on the stereo app is Coleman Hughes. Coleman is the contributing editor at City Journal, who often takes on issues related to race and racism. He'll be joining the Ace Man today at 2:30 p.m. Pacific time, and you don't want to miss the conversation. If you haven't signed up for the Stereo app yet, do it now because you'll love the experience. It's live, unfiltered, and you get to watch the Ace Man transform into an emoji for in-depth conversations with people he finds interesting. Go create your emoji, follow Adam Carolla on the app, and you'll be notified every time he's about to begin. Once the conversations begin, make sure you send your questions in so Adam can include you in the experience. That's what the Stereo app is all about. 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, today on the Stereo app with the Adam Carolla Show. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, journalist Rob Aurora. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, we got a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in and thanks for telling a friend. Love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian? Nice.
So much pomp, so much circumstance.
Yeah, we didn't have either one of those. We got we got jobbed again by the president. So
it's almost like he's busy doing something else.
Yeah, it's almost like he's running for the highest office in the land.
He seems distracted. So theoretically, we are rescheduling. So we will keep you posted because there is a joke I want to reveal to the man that
that's the whole point of getting him on this.
But either way, so we'll reschedule and we'll figure that one out. So I was planning on talking to Trump and talking about that this morning, and then I found this old note that I'd made for myself. I don't know why. I think I was on an airplane. Sometimes you sit on an airplane, you have a couple of pops, and your mind starts to wander, and I was making these notes, and it's an old piece of paper, and I've been looking at it for a number of months now, but this never seemed like a good time to get to it, but now seems like a good time. I was thinking about my old grandfather, Laszlo Gorog, And I was thinking about all the stories he used to tell me. And by the way, that's going to be a lost art, right? The bedtime story, the sitting down. He never had a book, you know, he just kind of freeformed it, you know.
From the old country, stories from the old country.
Yes.
I was going to say, like, we read Tessa books every night and she loves it, but never tell her stories.
Yeah.
We're the opposite. He's over story. He's over books. Now he wants to tell us stories and we have to tell him stories.
Yeah. The storytelling is it's very interesting. I used to go to his house. I would sleep over on the sofa in the living room because there was not a second bedroom, because what would you do with two bedrooms or two bathrooms? My God.
You live in two bedrooms.
How many places can you lay your head at once? How many pots can you squat upon at once? Yes. My family's exclusive one bedroom, one bathroom house. And my grandparents' house, of course, the bathroom was attached to the bedroom, so you had to walk through their bedroom. Super pleasant. I remember as a young person when my grandmother would throw a party, I always found it weird that everyone was walking through their bedroom to get to the head. But anyway, I'd go over there and I'd sleep on the sofa. I had my piss bucket underneath the coffee table. And my grandfather, who is Hungarian, who I found out later, you know, Hungarians are weird because you don't think much about them. Like, you think about the Italians and you think about the French and Canadians and Australians and Mexicans and Japanese. Like, you have thoughts about all of them. No really Hungarian talk. People
you know how we know? Because there's no good stereotype for a Hungarian. You're not going to Hungarian on me, are you?
Yeah, there's no good Hungarian stereotype. And as I've lamented, you could scour the entire Los Angeles basin. You wouldn't find a Hungarian restaurant. I mean, there are just oodles of Japanese, Mexican, Thai restaurants.
I wouldn't know where to start.
There's nothing. There's nothing. But old Laszlo Gorog, it turns out Hungarians are storytellers. That somebody said it to me once that they're very verbal people and they're storytellers, and it all kind of came back to me. And so he would watch Johnny Carson, or before he went in to watch Johnny Carson, he would come in and he'd tell me stories, and they're always of his old world. He grew up and the sort of the old ways and how they grew up. And he grew up in Budapest, and his dad owned a coffee house. Back when a coffee house meant something, I guess. I mean, not Starbucks, obviously, but a coffee house. Like, people would go there, order coffee, and order sandwiches, I guess, and, like, sit there. I don't even know that it was a bar. I think it was just
probably a communal gathering place.
Cafe.
Yeah, and I think at some point, then they had, like, rooms above it to rent.
Oh, no.
But it was a brothel. So he grew up like Richard Pryor. So
That's right. He
spent time in the coffee house, but he would tell me the stories, like the old-timey stories. And I just wrote down some of these random things. So some of the stories he would tell were true stories. And then some of the stories he would tell were made up stories. Like, he had a story about conjoined twins, and one of them liked, chocolate, and the other one hated chocolate.
True.
Yes. And
so this is an example of true story.
And they'd be episodic. He'd do it for 15 or 20 minutes, and then he'd go, well, that's enough, but we'll pick up where we left off. Because that's the whole thing. If you're going to do the story time, make it episodic, you know, make it like The Sopranos or something. You'll pick up where you left off the next night, and you'll actually look forward to that. Imagine looking forward to your grandfather coming in and telling you in a Hungarian accent some old story about conjoined twins. But he would freeform those. But then he told me some sort of real stories, and some of this stuff I felt was pretty bizarre when I was nine. I still feel that way, so I'll see if I can dig up some of them. Which is, He told me a story, and he probably made this up, but he said, but I remember having these kind of ooh thoughts. He said, there was a guy, and he got so drunk, and he staggered out into the street at night after the bar, and he woke up the next day in his bed, and he had no idea where he had been or what had happened to him or what had transpired. But when he woke up that morning, when he went to put his shoes on, both the metal tips for his shoelaces were flattened because they'd been run over by the trolley car, which meant he was in the tracks of the trolley car. And I thought, oh, it was a little Twilight Zone-y. Like, how else could those metal tips on the end of your shoelaces be completely flattened? Unless, now, I'm sure he made it up. But the point is I was young and I was like, oh, you must have been drunk out of your mind, passed out and just standing there. And that trolley car just went like right past you. And I was conjuring all those images. The other one I thought was weird is, he said in his town, men, when they went out on a Saturday night for drinking, they would wear a cup. They had a wooden cup that all the guys kind of just made themselves a cup.
Like a protective cup for the
drink. Yeah, yeah. And you'd put the cup, you just slide it down your pants before you went out, because if there's going to be a night of boozing and fighting, you know, back then, someone throws a knee to the groin or something, you rupture a testy, you're probably just going to die or never be right again. So I remember this discussion about guys would like whittle their own cups.
Smart.
He said, no big five going on. So he would tell me the story, and I think that everyone would have their own cup and then put it in and then go out and booze and carouse. He told me one about he told me once that him and his brother found or stole a big tub of ice cream. And I don't know if it was outside of an ice cream parlor or a place where they manufactured ice cream, but he told me they put this tub. He didn't steal it. He's like, they just put it out. And it was and he
big deliveries out in the back door.
He did have to fight off two guys to get it. So, no, he said they were just putting it out, like they were throwing it out, and him and his brother found this big tub of ice cream and were going out of their minds and took it and, you know, ran with it, couldn't wait till they got home, got the spoons out and went into it, and it had no sugar in it. It was just cream.
It
was everything but the sugar.
Salt.
And he said we would just like look at it and then we just leave it for an hour and then we'd come back and like try it again. Which is like a very 10-year-old kid thing to do.
Yep.
And I remember that story. And also, it's like I was right there. Like his town. He must have been, you know, he must have been in that town. He probably left in the late 30s, and he was, I think, in his late 30s when he left. So I mean, he must, you know, must have been there in like nine, you know, when he was a kid. It must have been like 1908, 1909. Crazy.
If he left in the late 30s, what did it? What was it? Did he have any connection to World War II?
Nazi sympathizer, but he didn't pick up a gun, if that's what you're getting.
Yes,
at
that's
Jewish
what
Gina.
I meant.
There was more of a tacit approval.
Was the romantic Budapest coffee shop leveled? I hope not.
He obviously he was there through World War I.
Oh right, sure.
You gotta remember
that World War I.
They don't call it World War. They don't call it World War. They don't call it World War II for a reason. Or they do call it World War. Right. Yeah, he immigrated to the U.S. in 1939, so says Max Zapata. So we got to figure out when he died, because we'll probably figure out how old he was, or when he was born, sorry.
1903.
Okay, so
93.
So he was 36 then, when he's a little boy, and darn, you know, when World War One broke out, he was a teenager. And
see some action?
No, but he was probably a little too young. He was probably 14 or something like that. But either way, there was, you know, all of Europe saw some action. So I don't know if Hungary got hit in both wars, but
it did. I'm looking up in real time because I, like you, wasn't aware of Hungary's war in role in World War II. Yeah, there was a lot of action going on in Hungary. Obviously, he fled, you know, just the right time.
Yeah, he fled in 39, right when things were starting to heat up. 36, worked as a playwright. His profession was playwright. So, like, they used to write a new play every week and give it to the playhouse, you know? I mean, how weird and quaint is all that shit, right? Like, sit in a coffee house, write a play, probably longhand, and then deliver it to the playhouse, and they'd pay you, you know, $100 for it or something.
He's a true bohemian.
Yeah, he was a playwright. He left, came here. I think he went to Mexico first, or maybe he went to Canada first, and then maybe Mexico. I'm trying to think. He didn't come straight here.
You did that long interview series with him, right, on a tape recorder. I have no doubt that he probably mentions, you know, where he went first.
Yeah, somebody else did that interview, but we have it.
Oh, so
we have
else.
It. Some, we have it somewhere. But then he gets here in, you know, 1939, and he can't really speak much English, and he's not really a longshoreman. He's a playwright. So now I have to figure out how to make a living when you speak Hungarian, writing plays in Hungarian. How do you translate that into getting paid writing TV scripts and movies in English? Obviously, he did that. He always had a strong accent his entire life. I don't know how much English he spoke in 39. I can tell you in 89, he still had a strong accent.
There, like Ozzy strong or less?
A little more refined.
he came from it from a sort of, all I remember is because he spoke English as a second language, he actually used English in a more precise way than most people do. He would never say that's hard. He would always say that's difficult. Because difficult is just a better word than hard. And that's just, and he was a writer. And he, when he came here, there was a Hungarian kind of underground here. And I don't want to call it underground, but there was a group of writers who were Hungarian writers. Evidently, Hungarian writers were prolific, and they're culturally, they told a lot of stories. And so they came here to Hollywood in the, you know, 30s. And they started to set up, and then there became this like little network. And so when a new Hungarian writer would come in, they'd have a place to stay, or they'd give him a little money or a little bit of food, and they would try to help sort of connect them with, you know, jobs and things like that. I think for some reason, Max Zapata, the name Ivan Trowers, he did Gentle Ben and Flipper. He did sitcoms about animals.
Animals.
And I think that guy was Hungarian. And I think that guy was like one of the guys who was there and, you know, going to be successful and everything else. But he then started finding work as a writer. And it just makes me think about how weird and quaint everything was back then. No smartphones, no computers, no, you know, you just show up. I mean, if you came here from Hungary, you'd knock on the door. Nobody knew you were showing up. Everything was like a little bit of money, a little bit of food, enough to last you for the week kind of thing. No, you know, no direct deposits, no loans, no debit cards, no nothing. Everything was tactile, you know. It's just like hands-on, like food,
analog,
very analog. And and a kind of a there was a definite appreciation for money and there was definitely an appreciation for food. Money was like, was money. You could touch it. You know what I mean? You had to hide it. You could keep it. You know, the, when money became invisible, that's when we started throwing away food and throwing away everything. And we got into that, don't fix the phone, throw it away, get a new phone, you know. But things for them were so permanent. You know, they, you know, they'd have a pocket watch that would last them for 50 years.
Well, they just sailed 28 days to get here.
I know.
Whatever it was. It's funny to hear. Oh, sorry, Gina. I just want to say real quick. It's funny to hear you wax about all these things. Is the funny that the thing that jumps out at me is that sort of sense of community. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You just show up, and they were there as a safety net to at least keep you above water. It's up to you to make your way, but that community was there. And I'm not talking about family. I'm talking about, you know, the sense of community amongst people who don't know each other but have a kinship. You know what I mean? I don't know if anyone knows that today.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's like that community or the Jewish community or just what a church community, sort of old in an old timey version of that. Those are, you know, falling by the wayside. I feel like those groups are insanely effective at helping people and taking care of them and giving them opportunity. And I think we're sort of replacing the community with government. Government's going to be the community. Like, they're going to step in. They're going to take care of things. They're not effective. And and they can't be effective because they're not in the community. Like, imagine my grandfather minus the Hungarian writing, Jewish writing community and some sort of government, you know, headquartered in Glendale, you know, wait in line kind of thing. It wouldn't work. It can't work.
Whatever the community was, they had it figured out. They had a de facto network to get you on your feet, get you a little bit of food, maybe a little bit of money, whatever you need for those first few days or weeks, and then, you know, hit the ground running, so to speak.
Well, and it's so funny that you say that, Brian, because I don't think about this very often, but I don't know if you remember this, but in the 80s, like in the mid 80s, there was a big influx of Russian Jews coming to America. I know.
I saw that Robin Williams movie.
That's right. Moscow on the Hudson.
And a lot of them came to Kansas City. It was a big hub for the Russian Jewry, you know, program. And tons of new Russian Jews came to, you know, Overland Park and Kansas City. And I remember, like, you basically, like you said, you know, the Jewish community, Adam, like every family from the synagogue would adopt a family and, you know, make sure they have what they need. We'd play with the kids. And it was just what you did. It wasn't like, do we want to do this? No, this is what we're doing. They're coming. They have nothing. How do we help?
Yeah. And it works. And it's really effective, and it's kind of mainline effective. When you get a bunch of bureaucrats and people and paperwork, now it's all of a sudden things just get so diluted and watered down and everything. Yeah, it'd be nice if we could get back to that that community. Anyway, just an old piece of paper I found with old stories about Lhotse, Laszlo Gorog, and why you should be a good person, because not everyone in my family's fantastic, but Laszlo Gorog was a good dude, and he made some lunches, and he cooked some chicken paprikash and goulash, and he told some stories, and now, all these years later, I think about that guy all the time and go, that's a good guy. So, like, you make a pot of goulash, you tell a few stories, you go on a couple of hikes. It doesn't end when the hike ends. It doesn't end when the goulash has been consumed. It then becomes a memory, and the memory just lives on. And by the way, your shitty actions also become memories, and they live on.
That are crystallized.
As well. So how do you want to spend that hour? You know what I mean? You could spend that hour creating a shitty memory. You could spend that hour telling a story about conjoined twins and creating a good memory that, again, just in those, like, quiet times, couple of drinks on the airplane, just kind of closing my eyes, not really able to sleep, just going to close my eyes. And it just drifted right to Laszlo Gorog, born in 03. Jesus Christ.
So he lived till he was 90?
Yeah, he
wow.
No, beyond, because he
died. Oh, I thought you said he died 93?
No, he lived to the age of 93, died in 97.
97.
Oh, wow.
This is a problem for the 90s people,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's if you make it to 87 and you die in 1921, no one's confused. You said your Nana died at 21. Like, no, my fucking grandfather, his legacy is, are you 97 or 93, or did you die in 93, or did you die in 97? Yeah, 97. Remember, I got the call. I got back when we had phones, right? Back before cell phones.
Yep.
I think I got the call like four in the morning. It's just my grandma, just a bundle of tears, like a Friday night or something. Like, he's passed. He's gone. I just got up, went down there. That's when I met the good people from the Neptune Society.
Right.
Johnny on the
like
spot,
with
man.
Them.
Guy rolled in 6:30 in the morning with his mom's station wagon. That was,
you knew the guy who did Fluffer? He's obsessed with the sea.
Who was Ivan Trowers?
I think you're thinking of Tors. T-O-R-Z-S? Or is that...
That's whatever.
Yeah, Hungarian
no,
playwright.
It's a completely different guy.
Yeah, no.
This guy did an elephant and a giraffe movie.
Yeah.
Operation Dumbo Drop.
Ivan Tors, yes.
Yeah, so he did a lot of science fiction movies and underwater sequences, but then moved into...
What years was he doing? Because my grandfather was doing science fiction, as you well know, with the Mole People and Land Unknown, and he had a couple of these sort of schlocky sci-fi things, and
yeah.
Ivan must have been Hungarian.
He was Hungarian, and he got into sci-fi in the 50s. He produced The Magnetic Monster, Riders to the Stars, and Gog. And then the following year came the syndicated TV series Science Fiction Theater. But then after that, he went underwater, creating Sea Hunt, The Aquanuts, and then...
So he started filming underwater, and that's how he got into Flipper and Gentle
Ben. Then after that, gets into Flipper, Zebra in the Kitchen, Clarence the Cross-Eyed Lion, Gentle Giant, Rhino.
Rhino?
Yeah.
I did all animal shit.
Yeah, wow. Got really, really into the animal stuff, and then made those into TV shows like Gentle Ben and Flipper.
What year did he die?
Atari.
Listen, Gentle Ben and Flipper, these were big TV shows.
Oh, no, show the guys a multimillionaire.
Yeah, I know the theme song, and I never saw the show.
The Flipper?
Yeah.
And
Flipper, faster than lightning,
no one you see. Do you remember that one, Brian?
No, but if you tell me you did the Incredible Flipper. Mr. Limpet, I'm going to fucking break all this equipment.
Flipper. Yeah. And it was such a weird... They're both really the same thing. One was Florida Everglades with a bear, and the other one was somewhere else in Florida with Flipper, I think is how it worked. And they would just save the day. And what's his name from Duel was the game warden.
Oh, the guy we just
Weaver,
mentioned.
Dennis Weaver.
Yeah, Dennis Weaver.
And his kid was young Clint Howard.
The kid wow.
Clint Howard,
little Howard
was the kid on Gentle Ben. All right.
Yeah, so he died in 1983.
83.
Was he
83?
The age
Clint
66.
Howard?
No, Ivan Tors.
Oh, 66.
Yeah.
Killed by a llama.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize
cross-eyed
that.
Llama.
All right, let me hit Simply Safe here. Break-ins on the rise during the holidays. So Simply Safe is having a huge holiday sale, 30% off any system and free security camera. Whether you're traveling or staying put for the holidays, check out 30% plus free security camera. And the deal, it ends this week. Simply Safe has been with us for a decade now. I've used them in all my properties. You do not have to drill. You don't have to pull wires. It's not a mess. Everything's very compact and clean. The batteries last up to 10 years, so you don't have to replace those all the time. U.S. News World Report calls it best home security of 2020. It is Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Get 30% off Simply Safe plus a free security camera today by visiting simplysafe.com/Adam. Go today. This week only. That's simplysafe.com/Adam, simplysafe.com/Adam.
Ivan died in Brazil while scouting a new TV series.
She was looking for Nazis, let's be honest.
Well, he should, because he was probably a Hungarian Jew who came here. I wonder when he got to the United States.
He, let's see, he moved to the U.S. just prior to World War II. Arrived with his brother, Irvin, in 1939.
Yeah, so him and Grandpa landed here in the same time, probably hooked up and networked, and here we are. Wow. All right. Well, let's see. We got a young journalist, Rav Aurora. He's he writes for, is it called Quillette? Is that how I pronounce it? Quillette?
I don't know.
Okay. Quillette?
Yeah, Quillette. He has a New York Post.
No,
yeah.
No, I'm saying
he's
that's how I pronounce
Canadian.
It.
That's some Canadian bullshit.
Yeah, and has a whole lot of thoughts on the big shooting and the riot and everything that was going on in Philadelphia, I guess, the other night. I didn't know that much about it, but it was another big race riot and a police shooting and all that stuff. So we'll talk to him. Also, there's an interesting article that I'd been sitting on for a number of weeks, but I thought if we're going to talk police shootings, this is a sort of breakdown of the Breonna Taylor thing, and it's some of the grand jury stuff in there. And it's interesting because it's a kind of a deep dive on Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, not the bad boyfriend, the good boyfriend. What nobody knows anything about that guy or what really went down or he fired a shot. He didn't get shot. She got shot. They didn't indict him or they dropped the charges on him, but he did shoot a cop. So then why did they drop the charges on him? It's an interesting dive into good boyfriend, bad boyfriend. And that story, that whole Breonna Taylor thing really just plays out like good boyfriend, bad boyfriend, and it's interesting. So we'll share that with you, and we'll do that right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, man, it's Luke from Wisconsin. When you coming back out here, buddy? Anyways, just driving down the road. We've been working. The highway sign says, good grief, buckle up. I don't know if things are much better out here. Take care, Buzzaboo.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Well, we're back with a young Canadian journalist, Rav Aurora. Aurora. I don't know why I trip over that. Good to see you. Am I saying Rav right? Am I pronouncing everything right?
Yeah, that's right.
Good. Good to meet you.
Yeah, nice to see you too.
I'm a little off guard just because we had Trump cancel today, and Chris was reading your articles and seeing how much they were shared. I think Joe Rogan tweeted it out there. I think Ben Shapiro tweeted out there. So he said this guy's a good guy to talk to. So he went out and found you, and here we are. So let's. I guess we should probably talk about the gist of the.
We should ask him the same questions you were prepared to ask Trump.
Yes. What's up with your hair?
Yeah.
The article which I didn't read. Like I said, Chris went out and realized this was a hot story. So he give us the gist of the article.
Sure. The one about white privilege in New York Post.
Well, yeah. Let's do that one first.
Yeah, so that piece was really just challenging the conventional insights into race in our society, particularly white privilege. And it was just based on an observation that the issue of white privilege, I felt, had been exaggerated by tenfold. It was creating more division between people, and it was resulting in all these different categories, this kind of racial hierarchy that white people are at the top of society. And so I looked into this topic in depth. I looked at the studies, I looked at the different metrics, and it's simply not the case that white people are just dominating society, which is kind of the conventional notion that you hear.
Well, I'll ask all of you this. Rav, you're of Indian descent? Uh-oh. I think Rob's mic just went. Rob, your mic just went out. Yeah, I don't know. That was weird. No static, no nothing. Yeah.
Your audio just dropped out.
A clean drop. But I'll ask this to everyone and Rob as well when he comes back. When we start going down the road with the white privilege, like we invent something, right? It's fairly new. White privilege. Okay. Then all the dickheads at all the news outlets and all Twitter and everything up, they just pick it up and they start running with it. And then the next thing you know, you have, you know, middle-aged white women apologizing for being white. And then somebody talks about a system of oppression, and then everyone buys into it. And the next thing you know, we're just way down the road with a theory that's insanely flawed. But does everyone believe it, or are they just going down the road with it? You know what I mean? Like, hey, got to get along. No one wants to fucking ruffle any feathers. I don't want to get fired from my job. I don't want to say anything. So you have a whole group of people that just go down this road. It's a false road. Of course, there's some true things in it, but the premise is wildly flawed and false. And then we have a whole nation just trucking down that road. Does everyone believe it? I never believe it, but I'm the only one who fucking says anything about it because everyone's a fucking coward. So what's going on? Do people really believe it? Like when they're apologizing for being white and all that kind of shit? Or are they just getting along? Are they just going along? Brian, you first. What do you think?
My guess, and Rob, when he comes back, can verify or explain what is wrong, is I'm guessing it started with some insight, some truth, some insight. And like you said, it became sort of a snowball effect where it takes on life of its own. People don't really understand what they're either defending or opposing. You know what I mean? Like they just kind of hop on this train that's now, you know, driverless on the tracks.
Do you think most people who say they buy into it, or feel that way?
Yeah, those are two questions. Yes, I believe they feel that way. I don't know if they know what they're buying into, is kind of my point. Like, it's probably not as simple as you're white, you're privileged. It probably has something more to do with socioeconomic, I would imagine, but maybe Rob can shed some light on that.
Rob, you back?
Is my vault? Can you hear me properly?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, now the picture's frozen, but the volume's
we
good.
We can hear you.
So.
Oh my goodness.
It's okay.
Keep going.
Yeah. No, you guys are absolutely right. There's so many different factors you can look at. There's education, there's socioeconomics, there's health, there's criminal justice, all these different areas. And you can pick any one. And it's not the case that the white people are doing the best. So the easy one that I use is median income statistics in the U.S. So who's earning the most? And it's not white people. It's actually Indian Americans. So people that look like me in the U.S. are making almost double the amount of people that look like Adam.
Now I have a little audio. I'll fill in. I'll spackle in between the audio problems here. Also, as I've been trying to yell at everyone, it is the most destructive thing you can do as a society. Now, everyone's a fucking coward. Nobody backs me up. I get it. But I've been fucking yelling about this for a decade. You can't take a group and tell them they're on top because they were born a certain way. And you can't take another group and tell them they're at the bottom because they were born a certain way. And you can't expect the group on the top to not feel resentment, especially if they don't feel like they're on the top. And you can't expect the group on the bottom to not feel resentment for the people on the top because you're telling them that's how they're born. Of course you're going to have a fucked up society. And of course the people on the bottom are going to languish because they're going to feel like they're there because of the color of their skin. It's the most destructive thing you can do to a society. I don't understand why this is so fucking popular. And I don't understand why people think they're fucking heroes for pushing this all the time. It's driving me nuts. It's fucking up our society.
It sounds like Rob might have the perfect win-win compromise to the whole thing by saying, hey, white people who feel so guilty for being so great and perfect and the best at everything, you're not. So is that what we need to hear?
Who feels like they're the best because they're white? Like, is there any this thing where it's like, oh, I'm white, so I deserve
who doesn't wear a pointy hat and burn crosses feels like that? Nobody I know.
Well, there are some people. So I don't know if you guys know Robin DiAngelo, author of White Fragility.
Oh,
big
yeah.
Book that yes. was hitting number one in the book charts in July and in August. And then that book is incredibly dehumanizing, but it's the gospel for white people. So that book basically posited that that white people need to atone for their original sin of being white, and they need to help people of color because they're oppressed in society. And Robin DiAngelo, she goes around to different universities and other areas, and she charges like $20,000 or $30,000 for these diversity seminars to teach young college kids and other people in big corporations that the white people are inherently privileged, and to be black and to be brown skinned is a form of being oppressed. And it's incredibly toxic. It creates more division. But authors like DiAngelo, Ibram X. Kendi, Ta-Nehisi Coates, they all sort of thrive on this victim narrative that minorities need white people to help them, and that white people just have this incredible power in our society. But if you look at the data, that's simply not the case.
Well, let's
ask Rob a question about that. I just sort of thinking about this for the first time, so please, you know, correct me if I'm wrong or if you feel differently. But if somebody was, I'm white, but let's say I'm Jewish. So if somebody was going around to college campuses holding seminars for people who weren't Jewish and were telling them that Jews are somehow inferior and we need to help them, I would find that to be kind of humiliating. Do you ever feel that way in this scenario?
Yeah. Yeah. So in my New York Post essay, I started it off with a friend who had texted me in July, who I will not name, but he.
Well,
I'm going to have him call in.
Really?
All right. Yeah. Have him call in, because this is interesting stuff. Yeah. I think Robin DiAngelo is a white woman. These are race hustlers. I don't know why. All I can figure out is that people are cowards. That's all I can figure out. I don't know why people are reaching for that race ring all the time. I don't know why we're going in on it all the time. We're there. It's like we just had a fucking debate, the last presidential debate. We didn't have foreign policy or security. Race was like a fucking huge chunk of that debate, was us talking about race. It's insane. It's 2021. This is born from the media. This is cooked up. Most all these police shootings, there's a fucking viable story. Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot. That's not what happened. That's not even the story. The kid was wrestling with a cop and got shot. We're nuts. This is the media. Why is everyone buying into it? It's crazy. First off, three quarters of the, he was a young black man gunned down in his prime. All the three quarters of those stories have a whole bunch of circumstances, a whole bunch of shit that we never talk about or doesn't come to the fore. And then there's a whole bunch of white dudes who are shot by cops, too. But we never talk about it. So we create this landscape that looks like white cops are hunting black men, and everyone buys into it. And then all the politicians buy into it, and all the cowards buy into it, and all the scared people buy into it. I don't get why it gets so much momentum. Is it just everyone is freaked out to open their mouth? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Sure, that's part of it.
Well, how many people have come, good people, friends, you know, whoever, have come on this show just alone going, I don't want to be involved in this joke or this conversation. We hear that all the time.
Rob?
Hello? Yeah.
Sorry, now we're
there
back.
You are.
We got you on the phone. Sorry, continue.
All right.
Robin DiAngelo, how does she get to write a book on race? Like, what is she? Is she a middle-aged white lady? Who is she? Oh. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, she's a middle-aged white lady, and she is the person you go to atone for your white privilege. Mm. And she's trying to help minorities like me and black people because they're so oppressed in society. And it is incredibly dehumanizing to view people based on these color categories. Like, it's literally the exact opposite of what Martin Luther King was saying during the Civil Rights era. he was saying that we should look to people as individuals and not just based on the content, not just based on their skin color. But now it's the exact opposite. Now you see, for example, the African American History Museum. I don't know if you guys saw a month ago, they had this graphic that came out, which was very controversial, which said that traits like hard work and work ethic and individualism are all white traits, essentially. They're symbols of whiteness.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And working hard and being timely. These are all symbols of being white. And that is incredibly, incredibly insulting. But it's something that's become a little bit popular in our society, unfortunately.
Black Lives Matter had that on their charter, too. Like, literally... Yeah. Being prompt and diligent and working hard, these are like constructs of the white man.
Oh no, it's contagious.
You there?
Oh, there you are.
Sorry.
It was you.
Hello,
yeah.
I was thinking. All right. No, but I know you two are scared to talk on this subject. I feel that you guys are scared to talk about it.
No, you were frozen. We were waiting.
No, I just stopped. I'm just scared. You guys don't know it. You don't know you're scared to talk about it.
Well,
you're unaware of it. Everyone seizes up when you bring up race. That's what happens.
Two problems that I've talked about before that are the root of this. Number one, as long as we have cable news stations that are for profit, basically make money, and that's just part of the game. But as long as they're in it to make money and get viewers, they're not interested in telling a nuanced story. And that's number two. We have no grasp of nuance. Like, if you wanted to tell a nuanced story that tells the entire story, that's one thing. Thing that's honorable. It's not going to keep viewers tuned in. Like, after this, we'll tell you about the, you know, coming after the break, we'll tell you about the latest blah, blah, blah. It might not be nuanced, it might tell the whole story, but it's going to keep eyeballs on you, and that's going to keep the ratings up, and that's keep the money flowing.
But it's beyond nuance. It's shifting the entire narrative. That's not getting into the weeds or the details. It's shifting. Michael Brown and just turning it into hands up, don't shoot. We got another situation in Ferguson that had nothing to do with a bad cop shooting. That was a bad kid who strong armed a liquor store guy, walked down the middle of the street. Cop told him to get on the sidewalk. He ignored him. He kept walking. The cop backed up the car. He has his DNA on the cop's gun. They wrestled with a gun. He wrestled with him through a car window. That it was not he walking down the street and a white cop shot him. This is it's volitional and it's intentional. It's not they don't have time to get into the nuance. They're actually shifting it.
I agree about, you know, it has nothing to do with time. They could spend all the time they want. They could dedicate an hour or two to it. I think we're saying the same thing, which is the headline, the story, the fact is white cop kills black kid. But like, if you dive deeper into it, there's nuance there. There's like, oh, but this happened and this happened and this happened. We're saying the same thing.
Yeah, but I know we are, except for I'm only pushing back because it's not like. It's not like they ever get to the nuance, and all their stories of headlines of white cop shoots black kid who wrestled with cop, or black kid who had a knife, or black kid who had a gun. Like, they just leave that part off. It's just white cop shoots black kid. It eventually gets into the zeitgeist, and then if you talk to people, that's the story. If you just stop someone on the street, you go, what happened in Ferguson? They go, that big gentle giant kid, the cop shot him in the back, right? It's like, nope, never shot him in the back, shot him in the front, wrestled with the cop, DNA on the gun.
I noticed this on Twitter today. Every single time an unarmed black man is killed, they go out of their way to mention unarmed. The news today with the guy with the knife chasing after the police who got gunned down, he was just a black man. He was not an armed black man.
Right. This is you intentionally twisting the fucking story to agitate or titillate or excite or sell soap, which I get it. That's the business you're in. but it has become, but at a certain point, you have a fiduciary duty, I think, and you've let it go by the wayside, and now everyone is fucking agitated because they think white cops shoot black people. Statistically, it doesn't work out that way, but we never hear those numbers. Rob, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about the statistics. And we can talk about what happened last night and the numbers as well. But what happened last night in Philadelphia was cops were called to the scene because there's a man with a knife. And there's some brief video footage that's really, really unclear. And I would urge everyone to not draw sweeping conclusions just based on an incomplete video, which is what happens a lot. And so police are there, two cops, and then there's a young black man, and he has a knife, and they're telling this man to let go of his knife, and he keeps on approaching them, and then they're following this guy, and his mom is with him as well, trying to make him stop. But then he kind of just jerks forward, and then the video cuts off, and then the officer shoots him several times, and then he later dies in the hospital. And there's an incredible nuance to the story. An investigation is happening right now. We should be patient with this. But a lot of these rioters, a lot of these radicals, that doesn't matter to them. What matters is that a black man was killed. And so that's an excuse for not just protests, but riots last night. There were cop cars on fire. There was looting going on in stores. There's all these videos that were being posted. I have it on my Twitter if anybody wants to see a bit of a compilation. And there was one 56-year-old female cop who was ran over by a pickup truck. And there's video of this. It's incredibly, incredibly disturbing. And she suffered from a few severe injuries. I believe her legs were broken. She's in the hospital right now. And all this chaos and anarchy is ensuing in Philadelphia, or was at least last night. And it's incredibly, incredibly disturbing to me and shocking why there's riots, why there's protests, and it makes me wonder if we even care about the evidence anymore, if we care about rationality, about the facts. It's incredibly alarming.
Gina.
Well, yeah, one thing I was gonna say is that it's sort of ironic, to answer your question from before and pull the camera back a little bit more, it's sort of ironic that there's so much talk about what a safe space is, because there is no safe space to have this conversation. There's no safe space to question these things. So, you know, we talk about tolerance and intolerance to even broach the question. But you know, wasn't he armed or wasn't he shot in the front going toward the cop? There is no safe space to have that conversation. So beyond the media, in your individual friend groups, with your family, there is no room for questions like that without somebody doing quick math and saying, well, you're a racist. Like, no.
People are quick to like go to their corners and like,
yeah, you know, no. I thought this was a safe space to have a conversation about what we were just talking about.
Well,
so it goes beyond the media.
I think what's going on is this storm, which is, I think a lot of politicians are just driven by the media now. Just figure out what they're into, what they're talking about. You know, sure. You want the good stuff. You don't want the bad stuff. The media is just making hay out of this race stuff. They've just gone into hyperdrive over this race stuff. We live in a non-racist country. Number fucking one. We do not live in a racist nation. There's no reason why we have to try to convert ourselves into a racist nation. We are not a racist nation. We were a racist nation, and now we're not. That's it. I don't want to hear about the Klan or pockets of this or the Proud Boys or whatever. Yes, it exists. It always exists. It exists everywhere. But we are not a racist nation. We're trying to convince ourselves we're a racist nation. The news is going fucking berserk. We're so unracist that half the shit we do are hoaxes. We have to fucking make shit up. Jussie Smollett, the NASCAR driver, where we have to make things. We had to make Nicholas Sandman. Nicholas Sandman was just some kid wearing a MAGA hat. We had to make him into a racist. He didn't do anything. That fucking Indian was a nut job. Because a fucking nut agitator. He started the fucking thing. And we had to create a racist situation that didn't even exist. And then all the news outlets ran with it. And if you think... Yes.
Finish your saying, sorry.
If you think they're right, they're all cutting checks. They're all cutting checks to that kid. So did they know what they were doing? Yes, they knew what they were doing. That wasn't a rush. That wasn't a rush job. They all did it. And now they're all writing that guy checks because they were doing this. They cooked the fucking video. They pushed it out and they agitated us. They agitated the weak people. They agitated the cowards. They agitated the people who sit and watch this stuff and goes, oh, my God, we aren't racist. It's like, look at that kid. And all the Dumbo celebrities got on and like, we got to dox that kid. If you see that kid, punch him in the face. We're so fucking agitated and we're so gullible. It's sad. So the news went berserk. The news gone berserk. And again, you don't think they have an agenda? Why did they cut that video? Why did they edit that video to make that kid look like a racist? Why did they do it if that's not their agenda? They all did it. They all pushed it out there. They all ran with it. We all fucking bit. We're like a big mouth bass just on something shiny. We all fucking bit on it. And then, of course, the politicians just follow the media. Like, oh, this is what's trending. This is what's going on. This will get me votes. Now we have the media and politicians doing it. And then it trickles into the workplace, into corporate America. Yeah. And we got Robin DiAngelo having to fucking give us speeches, middle-aged white nut, giving us speeches on how to be white. It's insane. Sorry, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the politicians, the media, figures in pop culture, they're all coming together and they're supporting this narrative. Last month, I think this was in August, when Joe Biden released a campaign ad in which he said that black Americans are waking up every day in fear of their life from police officers. Like a literal whole campaign video on this, which is incredibly false. That's not what the statistics show. If you look at estimates from the national the weather data and the Washington Post police shootings database, the likelihood of being killed by a police officer is on par with being killed by lightning. It's incredibly rare. If you look at disparities between groups, it's true that African Americans are 13% of the population, roughly, and they comprise about 25% of the people killed by police. And so people point to that as, oh, look, they're overrepresented, therefore racism. And the other statistic they use is that black Americans are about three times as likely to be shot by police as white Americans. But both of those figures don't take into account criminal offending. If you factor in the variable of crime, you find that actually white people are three times as likely to be killed by police as black Americans. And so that disparity of 13% of African. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was. No,
we're good.
You're good.
That was a drop. I mean, what Rob is saying is. So here's the problem: black people, black men, they get shot at a higher rate than white men. And if you raise your hand and go, yeah, but they're also statistically more involved with crime. And if you're more involved with crime, your odds of being shot by a cop go up. If anyone brings that up, then that person's a racist. So
yeah.
I don't know how we ever solve any problems, because if you're talking statistics and you're being called a racist in the middle of it, it's going to be hard. Brian.
I swear to you, and you're just going to have to take my word for it, I was thinking about the Sandman case earlier today before the show, randomly, because it was an example of exactly what you said, which is I saw that little kid's, smug face and in the face of the Indian, the Native American guy, and I was like, yeah, fuck that kid. And then the same day, as the story was developing on Twitter, I went down this rabbit hole, and I somehow started reading this account from someone who was there, and the person was like, here's what happened. There are these black, I think it was called the Black Muslims, the most positive it was. Like they were
Israelites. Flockettes. Israelites.
The Flock Israelites?
I think that's who they are.
Okay. The ones who hang out in Times Square?
Yes, they will be missed.
I'm sorry I got that name wrong. But anyway, they were over there doing their shit, and they were agitating everyone, and then these kids ended up in the middle of it by accident, and this guy was there doing his shit. This ended up being, my point from earlier, more nuanced. There was a lot more going on than just the image that everyone knows of Sandman preening in the face of the Indian, or Native American, sorry. There's just so much more going on. But the news isn't motivated, like I was saying earlier, to report those nuances because they need eyeballs. They need people who are outraged. They need people who are buying into the story. Whatever it is, they need to sell soap, like you said.
But I'm going to go back to what I was saying, which is I don't. You're using the word nuanced, but I'm using the word cooked.
Edited.
Created. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between not telling the whole, you know, nuanced is I was late, you know. Well, you're always late. Okay, I don't want to get into all the what came before it, but we at least we can agree on I was late. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's then they don't get in all the minutiae, the nuances you say. But they're cooking this to agitate the public. That makes them guilty. Nuance is, I don't blame them for the nuance.
I guess I was talking about what we knew that day. Obviously, we did, you know, there was no way to know that if the footage was cooked, what happened?
Well, it was cooked. Saying, I mean, they edited it to make him look like a racist.
Understood. But I'm saying on that day, there were more details that, you know, to the actual events that were not just simply not reported.
Because they wanted him to look like a racist.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm
since
saying.
Come to realize, yeah.
Or do we? You know, do most people even know that now? You know what I mean?
Well, Sandman's sitting on top of a pile of money. So
I was going to say, meme, and the lawsuit will be the first thing that comes up, I'm sure.
No, they settled all out of court. I mean, it's most Americans, if you show them that kid, they'll go, that's the kid that blocked the Indian. They don't know that CNN settled up with him. I'm saying, I don't know if we're talking about the same thing or saying the same thing or not. I'm saying they cook it. They know what they're doing. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's a nuance issue. I think it's a credibility issue.
In this instance, yeah, you're 100% right. I don't know that they cook. I would imagine they'd be out of business if they cook tons of
video. No, they do it they do a version of it for every race-based story. They give the version. It's just what Dawson just said. If it's an unarmed black man, it says unarmed black man. If it's a black man swinging a knife, it says a black man shot. That's an attempt to get us to think this or go that way.
I think we are coming at the same thing from two different angles because I said one of the first things I said was they'll tell the story, which is objectively true, unarmed black man shot by blah, 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 but there's so much more. Again, nuance. There's so many more components to this.
All right. Let's put it to you this way. Nobody can know all the story. They're giving you there's a whole bunch of stuff, the all stories that we're never really going to get to. They're trying to get us to not look into that stuff and to think differently about this story by the way they present it.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
I don't know if anyone has these facts in front of them. I'm quite sure you don't. But by memory, and Rob, you seem to have a lot of facts and figures stored up. So perhaps you know. In the 90s, let's say, did we put in the headline what race people were when they were victims or perpetrators? Is that new? I truly don't remember.
He wasn't born.
He has a lot of cite a lot of sources. So, you know, like, for instance, when we report in the newsroom, you know, this person is tried to kidnap a kid walking to school in Buena Park. At the end, we say, you know, just so you know, he was reported as Hispanic, approximately 25 to 35 years old, you know, and that all comes in. But was the race always the headline? I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure if race is always part of the headline. I mean, if we're talking about police shootings specifically, white guys who get killed by the cops, they never even make the news. Like, there's a few local outlets that might report it, but cases like Tony Timpa, who was killed in a very similar fashion as George Floyd, the police were on his back for about 13 minutes, and they basically suffocated him to death, and this is on video. But his name will never ever be uttered in any mainstream conversation. But if it's if it involves a minority, then the race matters. If it involves a white person, then the race suddenly disappears. So there's a bit of an ideological narrative that's underpinning all of these issues.
Well, look no further than Daniel Shaver in Mesa, Arizona, the worst cop. Yeah. That wasn't a police shooting. That was an execution. That was the police executing a citizen. White guy. So we're talking about nuance. There's no nuance for that story. That story doesn't get told. So the news is not interested. So, A, are they interested in police shootings or not? Well, not if you're white. So you've already said something as a news outlet. Do you think police shootings are important? Do you think this is an issue? Is it something that should make news? If so, then the Daniel Shaver story would be a national news story, and everyone would be familiar with his name and that footage, because it was the worst cop shooting ever captured on video. But we are not, because the news has deemed that to compete. So what they want is, well, Shaver, he's going to compete. So what we'll do is we'll do the Nick Sandman story and present it this way. And if you're white and you get shot, we're done. We're not going to even show it. It's just be omission. That'll be it. Dawson's got a face over there.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, Brian, I respectfully disagree with you when you say that you guys are coming from the same point, because these reporters, the story is there. The story is there. And the story that they have reported on and all of the examples given is the exact wrong story.
Are you talking about Nick Sandman?
I'm talking about Sandman. I'm talking about Breonna Taylor. I'm talking about Michael Brown. I'm talking about everyone that you've come up with.
Yes, they're all...
The stories are there. It's not that we don't have enough time. We're not going to dig deeper. It's there. They're just not reporting it.
Well,
they're doing the narrative.
I'll put it to you this way. If it was just kind of rushed reporting, then it would favor the cops sometimes and favor the black citizen sometimes. Like, there wouldn't be a narrative, a theme. You know what I mean? The theme has emerged. That's what I'm saying.
I agree, and I don't think I said, and I hope no one thinks I implied, that it was a lack of time. Like, they're clearly doing it. I'm positing, and I truly believe this, they're doing it, and they know what they're doing, of course, but it's to excite the base, get people watching, get people tuned in through those commercials to the next segment. I don't think it's a lack of time. In fact, I don't think I suggested
well,
that.
Well, okay, who's
well, you
the
were
base?
Saying, you're who's- saying in the Sandman thing that they got the story, they rushed to get the story out, and then later on.
Oh, but it was featured prominently. That's barely, if you really think about the details of the case or the story, that's barely a news story, let alone a national sweeping news story. And of course, furthers he's whatever the narrative, he's an annoying little shit. He's agitating these Native Americans, whatever, or he's a privileged kid, whatever that narrative is, it completely falls in line with the story that they're telling over a long period of time. I don't think it's a time issue. I just want to clear that up.
All right.
Yep.
Rob?
Yeah. Just one point I was just thinking of now was that this re-racialization of society that we're going through right now, this obsession with race, actually distracts from the real issues. So if you look at what happened with Breonna Taylor, the war on drugs and the no-knock warrant and all the legal ramifications of that. Instead of talking about that, the conversation has been about like sleeping while being black and the dangers of being black in America. And there are real issues at play with George Floyd. Let's talk about the policy, which Derek Chauvin was actually working in line with. His knee was on George Floyd's neck. That was part of department policy. And many police officers have done that. Let's talk about that. But instead, the narrative is about race, and so instead of talking about the real issues, we just focus on this one variable, and so then the white people killed by cops, that doesn't matter anymore. All the nuances of these cases don't matter. It's just the race is a single factor, and from there we draw all these sweeping conclusions.
Well, and also, everyone thinks I'm fucked up for this, but... Barack and Michelle Obama giving fucking long-winded speeches about what a racist nation we're in and how young black kids, should have to look over their shoulder when they leave the house for fear. That is fucking people up. People listen to you. People listen to you guys. By the way, two-term black president, then giving us fucking long speeches about our racist nation and about how dangerous it is to be a young black man.
One of the most beloved presidents of our many generations.
He Barack Obama is bigger than any celebrity, and Michelle Obama is bigger than any celebrity. And they are more beloved in this nation than any couple I could imagine. If you did a power rankings of what couple would you like to come to dinner in the United States, they would probably beat the shit out of Oprah and Stedman, who happen to be black as well. Them giving us long speeches on how racist we are is fucking dangerous. It's dangerous. And I don't think people really understand that. And I know people fucking eat it up with a spoon. I don't know what is so attractive about feeling like we're racist.
Speaking of people eating it up with a spoon, do you believe or suspect, like I do, that I don't know how much Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, to extension, really believe that versus it's meat for the base. You know what I mean? Like in the same way Trump has meat for the base. Like
it
the message resonates. I don't doubt the message was focus grouped. You know what I mean? Like, it's a political speech or whatever it is. I wonder how much of that they truly like believe in their personal lives and their hearts versus, oh, this is a resonant message, right? It's timely. It's resonant. It's all that stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I believe it's been, you know, focus grouped and it's become a very popular talking point. I'm just saying it's fucking dangerous and it's tearing us apart. It's insane that we're so focused on race in 2021. Rav, you're a young lad, but I lived through the 80s and 90s. Race was no big deal.
Oh,
yes. Right.
Sorry, Rob, to cut you off. I had this thought, Vicky reminded me, Adam, when Gina brought up, did this happen in the 90s, for example? Mm-hmm. I don't know how we would prove this or even investigate it, but it feels like it turned on a dime or pretty sharply with Rodney King. Like, that was great ratings. Yeah. That was magnetic television. It was right there on video. This is the dawn of, you know, people having home video and stuff. Like, I wonder how much of it changed at that moment. Now we have a story that people are fucking paying attention to. Is underselling it. It was a huge story.
The thing about the Rodney King thing,
just to finish, another example of nuance. There was a lot more to that story than the video, which was compelling, but it turns out there was a lot more.
Well, the lot more was there was a chase, you know, that went on before we got to the end of the chase. But, you know, as far as, hey, if you got video of a guy getting beat the crap out of him with no edits in it, you know, your news outlet, you know, run that video.
You got to.
I get it. I don't think that's an example of one with a lot of nuance, because the nuance was just the chase leading up to the beating. I don't know.
Wasn't he high? Can we investigate?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure everyone's, by the way, everyone's high. I mean, George Floyd had like an insane amount of fentanyl and other shit in him as well. We don't talk about it, but everyone's on something, but Brian and Rav, who's too young, and Gina is somewhere in between. I lived in this town when all that went down. I remember all that, and we talked about racist cops. We were talking about LAPD being racist. We weren't talking about us sort of in general being racist. We've spread it from racist LAPD cops to us just in general, like as a nation. You know, and we've gone from a couple of bad cops or racist cops to we're all just that way now, which is, you know, we can tolerate a couple of racist cops. We cannot tolerate a racist society. Rob?
You should sniff for that one.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, on the issue of racist cops, study after study has been done on this, and we can talk about that. And a lot of these studies, they find that there is no sizable anti-black bias in police shootings. So Roland Fryer, a black scholar at Harvard, distinguished economist, he's done research on this, and he finds no anti-black bias in police shootings. And there's so many studies on this. Some studies show that black police officers are more likely to shoot black suspects than white suspects. perhaps because they're less afraid of their shooting going viral because they're black themselves. But there's so many studies that show that white cops are no more likely to shoot black suspects than white suspects.
You have to use your head and think. I mean, if you think logically, these cops are people. They have families. They have careers. You can imagine a black cop shooting a black man. Sorry, a white cop shooting a black man today. You would have to hesitate for a moment. You would have to know what this could mean. This could be the end of your life. This could be the end of your career. This could be the end of this neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like it just stands to reason that you would have to give it a thought. You would never want to be that white cop filmed shooting that black man. Hey, Rob, can you hang with us?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
As long as you're a fountain of knowledge and we're getting into a very interesting discussion here. I had this Breonna Taylor sort of timeline breakdown, grand jury, good boyfriend, bad boyfriend article that was sitting around for about a month. So Dawson has dusted it off and be a good time to get into it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a spot. We'll take a break and we'll come back and do that article with you, Rob. First, let me tell you about Relief Band. Oh, yeah. Nausea. Who the hell likes nausea? You get car sick, maybe drank a little too much, hungover, Relief Band, number one FDA cleared anti-nausea wristband. This thing actually works. I know it sounds bizarre, but it works. It's clinically proven to relieve nausea and vomiting from motion sickness, morning sickness, chemotherapy, anxiety, hangovers, migraines, and more. 100% drug-free, non-drowsy, fast-acting, all-natural relief with zero side effects. Originally developed 20 years ago to be used in hospitals, and now it's over-the-counter. Relief Band stimulates a nerve in your wrist that goes to the part of your brain that controls nausea and blocks the signal to your stomach that's telling you to be sick. So if you have any of that, please get yourself Relief Band, right, Dawson?
Don't fall for the cheap bands you find in drugstores or see all over your Instagram feed. Reclaim your life from the fear of nausea. Right now, Relief Band has an exclusive offer just for Adam Carolla Show listeners. If you go to reliefband.com and use promo code Adam, you'll receive 20% off. So head to reliefband.com and use promo code Adam for 20% off.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Rob and the gang, and we'll break down this grand jury testimony with Breonna Taylor. A lot of interesting stuff in there that a lot of people don't know. We'll do that right after this.
Hey, movie lovers. Who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.